Welcome to the show that gets Christians thinking about faith and politics. Get ready to challenge the status quo, expand your imagination, and tackle controversy head on. Let's stand together at the intersection of faith and freedom. It's time for the Libertarian Christian Podcast.
You're listening to the Libertarian Christian Podcast, a project of the Libertarian Christian Institute and a part of the Christians for Liberty Network. What you're about to listen to is a presentation given at Freedom Fest in June 2025 by Benjamin Jaffone, related to his book, published by LCI, titled A House Divided, Technology, Worship, and Healing the Church After COVID. If you're more of a video person, you can watch this presentation on our YouTube page or at the link provided in the show notes. I had the pleasure of being an early reader of A House Divided and of getting to know Benj at Freedom Fest, and he's a first-rate theologian who cares about freedom, and I highly recommend the following presentation and his book. Here's the presentation.
Our first speaker and author, he is a minister, an Old Testament scholar, a missionary, and a pastor of a church in Western Pennsylvania. And most relevant to what we're talking about, he is the author of A House Divided, Technology, Worship, Healing, and the Church After COVID. Please welcome Benjamin Jaffone.
Thanks, Doc. Thanks, Norman. Thank you all for being here. It's wonderful to be here. This is my first time at Freedom Fest, and so I'm very excited to be here. Now, this book, A House Divided, Technology, Worship, and Healing the Church After COVID, I wrote it primarily aimed at fellow Christians to try to demonstrate the errors that we saw during the pandemic, and specifically the spiritual harms that we allowed to happen in our society and the errors of the church, and to ensure that this sort of thing never happens again. Now, according to the Christian worldview, God created the world and human beings within it for a purpose, and that purpose is to glorify himself. If there is a God, he is the creator of everything, and everything exists for him and by him. And he created human beings especially in his image to reflect his glory and his benevolent rule into the world. We rebelled against him, which resulted in the chaos and disorder and antagonistic relationships that we see in the world between us and God, between each other, and between humans and the natural world. But God's plan to rescue humanity and the world culminates in the incarnation, Jesus Christ entering the world to save it and promising to return to accomplish recreation. So that, in summary, is the Christian story. And one of the ways that God has chosen to make us like him and to cultivate virtue to make us more like Christ is our life within the church, the life of worship and prayer and singing and sacraments and fellowship. Now, I know there are some public figures these days who don't embrace the literal truth of Christianity, but see Christianity as a positive force in society for social solidarity and shared purpose and morality. And I'm glad that they believe that. But what I'm arguing in the first part of this book is something more. I'm arguing that life together in the church, which we were robbed of during COVID, is actually even more important and essential to our human being than just the utility of community and shared morality. In other words, the church and the sacraments are more than just a bowling league or some sort of neighborhood association. The rituals and rhythms of our shared life together, according to what we believe God has revealed in the Bible, that those rhythms and rituals actually connect us with the transcendent and with one another in ways that are essential for human flourishing. What happened during COVID was that science, as a method of converging on truth about cause and effect in the world, was replaced with scientism, which is a religion of modernity. Unlike the practice of science, which is perfectly compatible with Christianity, scientism claims that scientists, experts, engineers, technologists can actually determine with scientific method and scientific rigor what is right and wrong, morality, and what is the purpose of human existence, meaning. And actually, according to the religion, to this religion of scientism, the meaning of life was just to stay alive, apparently. And morality was oversimplified to be what might potentially harm my neighbor by spreading this virus. And this is why we had older people shut up in their rooms and their apartments, unable to spend time with their children or their grandchildren, because there was no higher good or purpose for human existence, or no other higher moral principle that could be admitted. Now, in this book, I acknowledge that the Western church overall didn't perform so well in the pandemic. But then again, neither did most social institutions. So I don't know that churches were uniquely good or bad. And many of the voices speaking up against lockdowns and mandates were Christians, although many were not. And as a Christian, I'm really thankful for people who spoke out about those things and found common cause with Christians who believe in liberty. So speaking to a room full of liberty-minded people, I've tried to understand and wrestle with two sorts of things. What made Christians uniquely positioned to fail during the pandemic? But also, what aspects of Christian truth make Christianity the solution and commend itself as a way forward? So here are two aspects of the Christian church, and I'm broadly speaking of both Roman Catholics and various kinds of Protestants. I'm Presbyterian, but just broadly about the Christian church that positioned us to fail big time during the pandemic. The first is the nature of our religion as a religion of the book. Now, I'm a biblical scholar, so I'm big on the book. But the actual practice of religion, especially for Protestants, has placed an overemphasis on words while downplaying the ritual and fellowship dimensions of our faith. And then we left ourselves open to having this mediating technology smuggled in as if it were an adequate substitute for meeting together. So if we emphasize the Bible and prayer and teaching and song, those things can be done remotely, but then we wonder why people don't find them as meaningful and transformative apart from the sacramental ritual and spending time together. So no one really thinks that watching a band or a choir and a sermon from home is equivalent to church. The second feature of the Western church that positioned us to fail spectacularly was the widespread anxieties among Christian elites about being perceived as anti-science and anti-intellectual. Now, by and large, the Christian elites who teach at universities and seminaries, like myself, and those who write for mainstream news publications, were terrified of being perceived as irrational, anti-science, anti-modernity, being perceived this way by their fellow elites who were not Christians. And I think evangelical Protestants in particular, as contrasted with Roman Catholics, are fearful of being thought of as anti-science. And so when the science, TM, came along and told us that we had to first close our churches and then wear the masks and later segregate churches based on vaccination status, these Christian elites were eager to get on board uncritically and to shame their fellow Christians who didn't want to go along with these measures. And part of this was a deliberate campaign on the part of the government to send out someone like Dr. Francis Collins, himself an evangelical, rather than someone like Tony Fauci. And this, to be honest, was the saddest part of the book to write, because I had to take to task some people whom I personally and professionally respect very much, but who let us down and who, to my knowledge, have not come out and walked back any of their support for various measures or they're naively following people like Francis Collins. And the irony, of course, is that leaders who admit when they've been wrong don't lose people's trust, but they actually gain back people's trust. But it's this fear of being tarred as anti-science or anti-intellectual that drove the response, I believe. And I confess in the book that I'm guilty of it too. Not so much on these matters, but on matters related to my own discipline, Hebrew Bible, Old Testament studies. But for all these weaknesses in the church, I still believe, not surprisingly, that Christianity is the solution and commends itself to liberty-minded people. First of all, biblical teaching is the best intellectual foundation for liberty. Regardless of age, race, gender, ability, background, every human being is made in the image of God and therefore has worth and value and has freedom and the right to chart the course of their life. So go around the world and look at cultures that are not shaped by Christian worldview, and you will see that their conception of rights and liberty is not the same. It's not as robust, I would contend. Second, the Bible and Christian teaching helps us to understand why corporate media and science and medicine and academia lost their way and lost credibility. I talk about this in the book at length, using insights from the field of the public choice school of political economy. But it's inevitable that the self-interest incentives that govern our private choices are going to infect and taint the structures that claim to produce the knowledge that is supposedly in the public interest. So however bad you think it is in the corporate media, by virtue of it being corporate, it's twice as bad in academia. But this is fully explainable by a biblical view of human nature. And the gospel, embodied in a person, Jesus Christ, is a humble message, and it stands in complete contrast to the manipulation and accumulation of power that is the way of the world. Third, the Christian worldview allows for the practice of science, assuming that a benevolent and wise God has created the world that behaves in regular ways that we can study. But Christianity also provides meaning and morality that's based in revelation that cannot be discerned simply experimentally. In other words, Christianity provides significant truth, or truth of significance, and genuine transcendence. And finally, Christian teaching provides the way forward for our society that has been broken and fragmented by the COVID disaster. It provides for forgiveness and reconciliation based on acknowledgement of truth and genuine repentance. And I think that if we compare Christianity to other worldviews, no one does forgiveness quite like we do. But it does have to be based in a true reckoning of what happened, not mere amnesty or some form of amnesia. But as a Christian, I would say that secular modernity, for all the good that comes with it, has not succeeded in providing ultimate and transcendent meaning and a coherent morality. And this is why so many people are turning to spirituality, but especially to Christian faith of various stripes. Now, you need to buy and read the book, right, to see all the ways that the Bible actually speaks into situations like what we experienced during COVID. But let me conclude my remarks by highlighting one of these biblical scenarios. In chapter 11, I talk about the book of Ezekiel, chapters 8 and 9. So this is the twilight of Ezekiel's people, the people of Judah. And the Babylonians have already taken a chunk out of this small kingdom and deported many of their elites, including Ezekiel, who was a priest. But the Jerusalem temple, Solomon's temple, is still standing as a place of God's presence with his people. But an angel takes Ezekiel in a vision and gives him sort of a James O'Keefe-style hidden camera view into what is actually going on behind closed doors in the temple. And the priests, the kings, the king and the elites are not worshiping the God of Israel. They're worshiping lots of other gods and doing lots of inappropriate things. Now, there's a lot here that reminds me of the corruption in government and science and academia. Ordinary people are not specialists, but have been trusting that the priests and the politicians are doing the things behind closed doors that will result in the flourishing of the society. But in fact, those elites are doing the opposite. And in doing so, corrupting the meaning-making and morality-making apparatus, they're leading their society to destruction. And so in the vision, angels go through the land and mark the foreheads of faithful, ordinary people who, it says, sigh and groan over the abominations that are committed by the leaders behind closed doors. And they sigh and groan because they are powerless to stop it. In this information age, in the age of apocalypse or unveiling, there's a lot to lament about the state of our society. I'm fascinated by the ads that I see on podcasts for products like Patriot Supplies or Patriot Generators. So why do you affix Patriot to these emergency products? Well, the assumption is that true patriots see the state of the society and are distressed and are making preparations for the worst. But of course, there is only so much that can be done by ordinary people in the face of corrupted elites like the media and academia and public health. But the story in the book of Ezekiel concludes not with those who sigh and groan, taking up arms to abolish the corrupt systems. That's actually something that God does. The story of ancient Judah, which is a picture of what he will do for the whole world because of Jesus Christ, is a story of God making of us and of humanity what we cannot make ourselves into, either individually or collectively. So put simply, it's powerful grace doing what we can't do for ourselves. Christianity is not overly optimistic about any society built by humans. All humans have sinful tendencies, and no elites are perfect. But we are hopeful, and we can be at peace and joyful because of hope in the resurrection and new creation. It's not a blind faith, but it's a confidence in God who has revealed himself to humanity in a book and in a person, Jesus Christ. And I think that's where we can turn to hearing more about Cody's book, because even though societies cannot be perfect, they can be more or less conducive to human flourishing. And liberty, as we'll see, is the best way. So thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Libertarian Christian Podcast. If you liked today's episode, we encourage you to rate us on Apple Podcasts to help expand our audience. If you want to reach out to us, email us at podcast@libertarianchristians.com. You can also reach us at LCI Official on Twitter. And of course, we are on Facebook and have an active group you are welcome to join. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
The Libertarian Christian Podcast is a project of the Libertarian Christian Institute, a registered 501c3 nonprofit. If you'd like to find out more about LCI, visit us on the web at libertarianchristians.com. The voiceovers are by Matt Bellis and Catherine Williams. As of episode 115, our audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.
Hello, everyone. It's Doug from the Libertarian Christian Podcast. You might notice already that this recording sounds quite a bit different from usual. In fact, it probably sounds pretty crappy. Well, I'm doing this to show you something pretty amazing. As you might know, the guys over at Podsworth Media have been producing my show for several years, quite a while, hundreds of episodes. And now they have a brand new online app for taking rough recordings like this one and making them sound a whole lot cleaner and a lot more listenable in just a few easy clicks. So here are some of the core features. They remove background noise. It reduces plosives, which is really handy for me because I often forget to put my pop filter on before I do a YouTube video. Because pop filters look terrible when you're on camera. It fixes clipping. It removes clicks and pops. It evenly levels dialogue so that you don't have somebody talking really quietly. And then somebody talking really loud because they're too close to the mic or too far away from the mic. How do you use it? It's easy. You go to podsworth.com, you click get started. And because you're a listener to one of the Libertarian Christian Institute's podcasts, you can get 50% off your first order by entering the promo code LCI50. That's LCI50. And you will get 50% off your first order. If you are doing anything like a podcast, a video, a sermon, an audiobook, anything that's spoken word, you want to use podsworth.com and clean up your audio to be even more professional and polished.
your audio to be even more professional and polished.